I'm Jacob Heilbrunn, the editor of The National Interest, and welcome to our podcast today with Antonio Ferrier, a longtime Capitol Hill staffer who worked for Senator Mitch McConnell. Antonio, Donald Trump today announced something of what appears to be a U-turn on Russia and Ukraine. He threatened Russia with sanctions and tariffs in a Truth Social post. He's declared, based on the fact that Russia is absolutely pounding Ukraine on the battlefield right now, I am strongly considering large-scale banking sanctions and tariffs on Russia until a ceasefire and final settlement agreement on peace is reached. Get to the table now before it is too late. Thank you. What's your take on this latest development?
Well, I think he simply wants a big deal. And given the actions of the past few weeks, with the Russians clearly trying to make hay of where the Trump team has been on Ukraine, that they've been increasing, the Russians, that is, have been increasing strikes across Ukraine, they're not doing what Donald Trump wanted. So Donald Trump's trying to get them back to the table, get them to the table with these threats. We'll see if it works.
Isn't the real issue that Trump has jerked support for Ukraine on the battlefield and left them vulnerable to Russian attacks? And as long as that's the case, why does Putin have any incentive to engage in negotiations?
That's sort of the question that I think many of America's allies who support the cause in Ukraine have very publicly wondered is, you don't have a lot of leverage if you're basically taking things off the table. And so I think that is a very good question. Went from, you know, a couple of days where it was stopping intelligence sharing, saying that they were not going to, the United States was not going to support or give more military assistance to the Ukrainians, with Keith Kellogg yesterday saying that it basically had to kick the Ukrainians like a donkey to get them back to the table. But in that period of time, the Russians have been taking advantage of that with propaganda at home, flexing their muscles in Ukraine with slaughtering more innocent people. But ultimately, I think maybe Donald Trump realized that he wasn't getting the Russians to the table. He was just giving them more and more leeway to claim victory while still taking more Ukrainian land and lives. So hopefully there's some good out of this, which is that he's actually understands and seeing what is happening in Ukraine and may now pivot to a more productive place, which is to get the Russians to heal, to bring them to heal, so to speak. So maybe I'm being too much of an optimist, Jacob, but, you know, hope springs eternal, I suppose.
Now, I know you were just in Germany on an election trip. What's your take on the incoming chancellor, Friedrich Merz? And he seems to be taking a pretty active stance, as far as I can tell, pushing for a 500 billion euro infrastructure fund to rebuild both Germany's infrastructure and the Bundeswehr, or the German army. Are you more optimistic that Europe is going to step in where the United States is retreating?
Yes. The short answer is yes. I think this is very difficult for the Europeans in a way that a lot of Americans don't appreciate. But as I've joked with some friends, the United States has never really wanted Germany to rearm, right? There are two world wars in the last century that kind of demonstrate that. We were the security umbrella for Europe, and for good reason. We needed to hold these countries together because they had centuries of slaughtering one another. We needed to be the glue that kept the security across Europe. And that was in America's interest. I think right now the Europeans are coming to a very stark realization that that reliance on the United States for security is really in question. And on any given day, based off of the posture of this administration in Washington, they just don't feel like they can rely on it. And Germany is always and has always been the critical
now,
piece for Europe.
Tell me about your perception of Capitol Hill, where the Hill website today reports that Republican lawmakers, including Tom Tillis and Susan Collins, are becoming increasingly restive about Trump's cessation of aid to Ukraine. Do you, based on your long experience on Capitol Hill, do you think that this amounts to anything, or is it just a hill of beans, so to speak?
Well, again, I choose to be hopeful. Senator Collins has been to Ukraine. Senator Tillis is a big believer in NATO and the Western Alliance. The question is whether it's just more than words. Senator Collins is the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, so she does have some leverage here. It is a Republican-controlled Congress, unitary-controlled Congress. So she does have some leverage. The question is, what is she asking for? I'm sort of in this place where I appreciate anyone who's willing to, speak their mind on things like Ukraine and NATO. I appreciate that. But I think we're kind of in the point at the point where I would hope to that it's more than just words. And I guess we'll see. She's in a position of power and leverage, and I would never underestimate Susan Collins. She is a fierce woman, but she's only one. So the question is, what can be done? And I think there are probably a lot of behind the scenes discussions going on, considering the government needs to be funded by the end of March. So I'll be hope springs eternal again, with some faith and confidence in Senator Collins. But again, we need more than words. We need actions right now.
Sometimes when you listen to Trump's adversaries among the Democrats and liberals, you get the sense that they view him as a kind of James Bond villain, an Ernst J. Blofeld craftily plotting to subvert the liberal order, and that he has a clear and coherent plan. However, I'm starting to get the feeling once more that he's hopscotching around. When you see how he zigs and zags on the tariffs and now is blustering about Russia, are we actually dealing with a president who's just kind of winging it?
I think two things can be right at the same time. I think many people who work for him have a very specific worldview, and I think he shares some of that. But at the end of the day, he wants to be the guy that makes the decision. He sits, as we've all seen him in the Oval Office, as at his resolute desk, and he signs these executive orders and holds them up. He did with tariff and Mex excuse me, on tariffs with Mexico and Canada yesterday. He likes to keep the world guessing. It's what he's done the first 4 years in the White House, and he's doing now. And that's why they come out really hard in one place, and then he says, well, maybe not. And so, I mean, the tariffs being the most sort of profound demonstration of that. The problem, though, is he likes to be the one that everyone's staring at, and they are. The world is. There's no question about it. The problem is that for businesses and for the economy, the global economy, frankly, doesn't work very well when there's so much uncertainty out there. You can't build a factory and then, oh, Donald Trump has made changed his mind on what those tariffs are. If you've built a factory in Mexico, you can't just move it to America. It takes a lot of money. So I think there is a lot of business anxiety and economic anxiety out there. So, and I think he's seeing that with the stock market, but I don't think we're going to see much changed in terms of him making these big pronouncements on tariffs and then what rolling them back. But it's very unsettling to the global economy and is bringing about a lot of fear and a lot of anger, by the way, in some of our allies.
Are we in some ways slitting our own throat, at least economically? If you look at capital flows and the European defense industry, have we in fact awakened a sleeping giant in Europe? The EU, I believe, has loosened restrictions on parliamentarians interacting with Chinese officials. Is the EU going to be a more independent bloc? And is that going to attenuate American influence, not only in Europe, but maybe in the Middle East, because we rely on those military bases in Europe for power projection into the Middle East.
So there are many things to sort of unpack with that, but I would start with number one. Yes, I think that Europe is waking out of a slumber. It's taken too long. Unfortunately, the thing that worries me in all of this, and again, I do want to commend them, right? They are taking bold steps, and we need to give credit where credit's due to the European Commission, to the French, to the Germans, to the Brits, et cetera. But again, maybe this is because I'm an old school conservative. I like to say I'm so old school that I might be new school. They can't just rely on statist approaches to all of this. Like, they cannot just be through big purchases of weapon systems from the big guys. They need to really undertake a revolutionary process across Europe, and this is going to be hard for them, where they are liberalizing their capital markets, where they're really changing their attitude toward innovation and to risk. They cannot keep doing what they've been doing. This requires an attitudinal shift. This requires, for example, the Germans lying on a psychiatric couch and saying to themselves, we can do this. Because the challenge they have is that the American economy is so big and strong and dynamic, and it is for a reason. And this is just something the Europeans are really going to have to play catch up on. And I don't want to underestimate their strength and their power, because they do have it, but they really need to have a massive attitudinal shift. Now, to your question about the Middle East, yes, I mean, the United States has bases all across Germany, and this isn't just for European defense. This is how we are allowed to force project into the Middle East. And the idea, anyone who's saying we can just, go into the Middle East and fix it all and leave has not paid attention for the past however many decades, centuries. Every time the United States thinks it's done with the Middle East, something happens. And I think that's going to always be the case, or at least for a long time. I think it's very interesting. The Trump administration has announced today it wants to hold talks with the Iranians. Interesting. That's a very different position than it had in the first administration. But we'll see. I mean, again, Donald Trump likes making big deals. So, or at least, whether they're actually as big a deals as he says they are is a whole other question. But, he wants big deals. So I guess we'll see what happens with the Iranians. But to a certain extent, we are cutting off our nose to spite our face with some of these actions in Washington that are going to hurt the United States, and hurt consumers. I have hope and faith in the Europeans, but they are going to have to really radically change how they think about themselves and how they actually grow their economy. Because if they just continue to do big statist approach like the French love to do, then they're going to struggle.
The point about Iran is fascinating. I've always wondered, do you think Trump will be the American president who reopens the American embassy in Tehran and visits the capital?
I cannot see that. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. That is just such a bizarre image to me, but I cannot see that. I would be very curious what the Israelis think about all of this, because the past year and a half have seen Israel absolutely upend the sort of paradigm for the Middle East. I mean, you cannot like what the Israelis did, but they certainly took bold, very bold action after the Hamas attacks of October 7th. So they have upended the Middle East, because I think they were probably, from their perspective, tired of this rinse and repeat, where, they do small incursions, say, into southern Lebanon, do some strikes into Iran from time to time. They just totally upended everything. I'm very curious to see what the Netanyahu government thinks and about all of this, especially after there's also been some direct contact between the Trump administration and members of Hamas over some of the American hostages. So I guess we're in a position where the United States government is taking a maximalist approach in terms of negotiations, and we'll see where they end up. But again, it can't just be the photo op. What matters is what's inked in any deals. And, when going back to Russia, my very strong opinion, which is not unique, is that with regimes like in Moscow, they only understand power. And we cannot let a power vacuum be filled in Ukraine by abandoning the Zelensky government and the Ukrainian people. But it's power. And so it can't just be some parade somewhere. It's got to actually be filled with real security guarantees and a real European military commitment to Ukraine to save itself and protect itself.
Well, Antonia, I love your observation that old is new, and that in fact, old style conservatism could become retro. So thank you very much for all those insights, and we definitely have to do this again.
Thank you, Jacob. Wonderful being with you.
Thank you.